The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the BS Report. We're going to talk a little baseball today. Grantland's Jonah Carey coming up in a little bit to talk about over-unders and fantasy and all kinds of stuff. But first, we haven't talked to him for a while. Our buddy, Yankee fan. He does know we're calling. Jacko. Let's give him a ring.
Complex Litigation, this is John.
Oh, Johnny!
What's up, buddy?
Happy almost opening day.
Same to you. Thank you very much.
I was just outside jumping on the trampoline with my kids, thinking about how we needed to do a podcast, and ran right in and called you.
Are you okay?
I'm fine.
I'm available for a blood transfusion if you need it.
My ankles are still attached to my legs, so I feel good.
That's a good start.
Poor Jabba.
Poor Jabba. Jabba.
You want to talk about it?
Well, I'm not sure I'm ready to, but Jabba burst on the scene and was this phenom, and Jabba rules and all that. I own a Jabba rules T-shirt, and then he ran into trouble with the Lake Erie midges in Cleveland. And it's been sort of a decline ever since.
I forgot about that.
He was good in 2009, though, a little flashes of glory in the World Series. He had some big outs in that postseason. So he had a little flash of glory there. And, the heartwarming story with his father and everything and where he came from and rising to the top of the heap. So you hate to see him happen to him. Anybody, really. But it's brutal to happen to Jabba.
Coming back from
Tommy John.
There's a couple people I'd like to see dislocate an ankle on a trampoline, but he wasn't one of them.
Who am I kidding? Me too.
So, walk me through the bullpen now. You have,
They weren't really counting on Jabba until midseason anyway, because he had Tommy John surgery last year.
Right.
Plus, when he had after Tommy John, he had he had some other kind of surgery. He had appendicitis, I believe. He had to have his appendix out, like an emergency appendix surgery.
Okay.
So he's really, really had some bad luck lately, poor Jabba. They weren't counting on him anyway.
Well, so you have Rivera at
that's all you need to say.
4 days younger than I am.
Yeah.
I played basketball for an hour and 45 minutes yesterday, and I'm limping around my house today. I don't know how he does it. I think he's a zombie. What do you think of my theory that he's a zombie?
I hope it's correct. I hope he pitches for 20 more years in that case. Yeah.
You have David Robertson, who was sneaky awesome last year.
Absolutely.
You have Boone Logan, who at no point in his career did anything point to the stats that he ended up last year. I feel like he's a regression candidate. What do you think of that?
Possibly. He was getting a little shaky in the second half. He was lights out, and then he was their go-to lefty guy, and he didn't really live up to that billing too much. But, he's a lefty specialist, so he's just going to have a limited role back there. He can do the job.
All right, who else? Soriano? Is he back?
I believe so.
All right. That's
solid.
Better than the Red Sox bullpen.
Absolutely. It's all you have to say. Rivera, that's all you need.
We have Andrew Bailey, who had better stats than Jonathan Papelbon the last 3 years, as long as you don't count the four DL stints.
Right. Plus, he pitched in a huge ballpark in Oakland, although I know he does have a lot of strikeouts. But
we have the kid from Houston, who
Mark Melanson.
We traded Jed Lowry for.
Former Yankee farmhand, Mark Melanson.
It's a bad sign when he's going for more money than a setup guy should normally go for in fantasy auctions, because people are just kind of anticipating the Andrew Bailey injury.
Yeah.
So they want to get the free 10 saves from the setup guy. Never a good sign.
Plus the Red Sox hype drives up his price.
We have Bobby Jenks. Oh, wait, we probably don't have Bobby Jenks. Probably not on the team this year.
As awful as his DUI arrest is, I do like the fact that, one, it was at a strip joint, and then that number two, the strip joint was called Babes.
Yeah.
You don't even try it when you name your strip joint Babes.
I think this is going to be Kenny Powers' legacy, that anytime something like that happens, it's just the default joke. Anytime a reliever does anything that involves the words DUI, strip joint, just anything, you get the Kenny Powers tag.
That should just be called the Kenny Powers. Tough news last night as Bobby Jenks picked up a Kenny Powers.
Right.
Oh, DUI at a strip joint. Oh, that's terrible.
So then we had this whole Alfredo Aceves, Daniel Bard thing going.
Yeah, the ace, Aceves.
That I know you were waiting for the first Bobby Valentine possible dissension with the front office headline. Who knew it would happen in March?
Yes, although Bobby V lost the first power struggle because I saw today that Iglesias got sent down.
Oh, when did that happen?
Today. He and Lars Anderson were both optioned to the AAA camp.
Michael Schur and I just exchanged a whole bunch of Red Sox emails on Grantland, and I was saying how I was on Team Bobby V with the Iglesias thing.
No.
I thought they should have kept him. Throw the leather around, Jose.
I think Larry Lucchino came down and said, Bobby, we have to let Ben win one, so let's just give him this one. Plus the fact that he hit a $175 at AAA or whatever, you know.
Yeah, but still. $175, it's better than 100. Yeah, I think they let Ben win that one, and I think that's the only one he's going to win. That'll be it after that. But so we have Michael Viles as the starting shortstop now.
Yeah.
Well then.
There you go.
He'll hit every once in a while.
Yeah, he can't play short though. Isn't he bad defensively? Don't you need some sort of combination of Iglesias and Aviles to make like one competent major league shortstop?
I actually think Jose will be back on the team probably May 1st, something like that. The thing with Aviles is he gets hurt.
Yeah.
He's had some injuries. So
you're looking at the Mike Aviles, Nick Punto platoon right now, right?
Yeah, Nick Punto, as anybody who's ever been in an AL Keeper League knows, is somebody that's kind of bounced around on everybody's fantasy team, like when you really have to fill out the spots. There might not be a worse hitter in baseball. I'm just doing this off the top of my head, but I remember having him one year, and it was 0 for 5 every day. I think he has like a tiny bit of speed, but that's about it. But, yeah, the Scudero trade has never fully been explained.
No, it doesn't make any sense. You trade your starting shortstop, who was, I mean, it was due to make $6 million, which isn't really huge money. He was pretty good hitter for you last year, and he's solid defensively. He's okay. And they trade him for no apparent reason with nobody to fill the role. Everybody thought it was to get money for Roy Oswalt, but then you didn't end up signing Roy Oswalt.
And the Red Sox
have $175 million payroll. They have the highest ticket prices in baseball, and they shouldn't be a team that's trading players for money.
I mean, you just hit it on the head, Johnny. You can't say that the Carl Crawford signing didn't mean anything because we have the money, but then play poor with the Scudero thing because we needed the extra $6 million to try to sign Roy Oswalt. That's when it does matter, obviously. Obviously, it did matter that we spent all that money on Carl Crawford.
Right, because they're definitely afraid of the luxury tax, as are the Yankees. Because apparently if you're over it next year, then the year after that, you get taxed at a 50% rate. How did that happen, by the way? Like, where was the Players Association? It's essentially a salary cap. Didn't we have a strike about this in 1994 and canceled the World Series, and now all of a sudden there's a 50% luxury tax?
Your buddy Bud Selig.
Where was Donald Fear? Like, why isn't he, like, letting himself on fire about that?
He's handling the NHL lockout right now. He's involved in that. Do you know that?
I know. He's the hockey players guy now. But who runs the Baseball Players Association now?
Who knows? They already did their deal. The deal happened. They did it, like, quietly way before it would have been a lockout.
And somehow let that go through. I mean, I can't believe they're happy about that.
The Crawford thing is, like, if I went out and just bought a Ferrari right now, and just drove home and was parked in the parking lot. And then my wife was like, hey, we need to send our daughter to private school this year. I was like, I can't. Sorry. Yeah. I'm out. I'm out of money. Sorry about that. We're going to send her to public school. But it's basically what happened.
Pretty much.
I also like Scooter. I thought he was like one of our most reliable bats going down the stretch last year, which
Yeah, he was good in September. And I thought he was allegedly like a good clubhouse guy, kind of good glue that kept people together and a lively presence.
Here's Punto's last 5 years. 270 at 210.
Oof.
The 291 on base. 472 at bats. Wow, Minnesota.
Jesus.
Rallied that back up to 284 the year after.
There you go.
Dropped down to 228. 238 in 2010. And then last year on the cards at 278.
Well, that's not bad.
Yeah, it doesn't, the on base isn't great. The 325 career on base isn't great. He is one of those guys that will always end up like around 13 steals and two caught stealing. So he's got that going for him.
There you go.
But yeah, I have a feeling he's going to be a little more involved in this Red Sox season than people are maybe emotionally prepared for. But here's the thing, as Mike Scher pointed out in our exchange today, the rest of the offense, if Crawford can come back, is so good that it really doesn't matter who that ninth spot is. It just doesn't.
Really? If Crawford can come back.
If Crawford can come back.
Right.
If Carl Crawford can come back and be the Carl Crawford of his Tampa heyday, the guy who used to scare the hell out of both of us.
Right.
Right? We were both scared of him. You were scared of him as a Yankee fan.
Sure. He was more scary to the Red Sox because he stole enormous bases against Veritek, but.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was scary to the Yankees too, no question.
My thing with Crawford is the defining quality that he has as a baseball player is his speed.
Right.
And yet we're batting him like sixth. And the worst quality he has as a baseball player is that he swings at terrible pitches. So we're putting him in a spot in the order where he's coming up with people on base. The top five of the Red Sox is as good as getting it on base as anybody in like the last 60 years of baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have this guy coming up who has terrible at bats and whose number one quality is his speed. It doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, I actually was hoping Bobby V would come into this and say, hey, look, this is ridiculous. Carl, you're batting leadoff. You're the fastest guy on the team.
Ellsbury, but he doesn't want to bat leadoff.
Well, who cares? We're paying you $140
million. He's not comfortable there. He's a sensitive soul. He's not comfortable in Boston. He's already not comfortable in Boston. So why do you want to bat? Why do you want to make him more uncomfortable?
Why does it make him uncomfortable?
The biggest thing is throwing a seven-year, $140 million contract to a guy who's 29 years old who relies on his legs because they're not getting any fresher and younger.
Especially, well, this is what I don't get. Why is he in charge of where he bats?
Well, he shouldn't be. But, I mean, with Terry Francona and his dangerous pill addiction, or the fact that he was, like, drinking Bigelow tea and patting them all on the head and you know, playing cribbage with Pedroia, let the inmates run the asylum. But, yeah, Bobby V is supposed to be, you know, this genius. He's going to lay down the law, but they all walk around on eggshells around Carl Crawford because he's making $140 million. And so they're like, we can't just set $140 million on fire. We have to make him as happy as we can to see if we can get some production from him.
I think that's idiotic. I mean, I go to Carl Crawford. I said, look, you're either batting first or ninth. Your choice. But
well,
you're going to be at the top of the order either way, and you decide. You're not batting in the middle of the lineup because you hurt us when you're in the middle of the lineup. So it's not
happening. What they should do is go to him and try to use it as a build up his confidence. Carl, we think you're a great leadoff hitter. You've got amazing speed. You're going to steal 60 bases for us in the leadoff in front of, you know, Ellsbury and Pedroia and Big Poppy. They're going to knock you in and say, we need you. This is your, you know, you're the spark that leads this team and, you know, build him up that way. But he doesn't like to lead off.
He should bat either first or ninth. The lineup should go with Crawford, Ellsbury, Pedroia, Gonzalez, Yukes, Ortiz. In some sort of, however that shakes out, but those six guys should be batting in a row. And to put Crawford after the power guys is logical.
It doesn't make any sense.
I thought Bobby V would fight the good fight there, but he seemed more interested in fighting the Jose Iglesias fight.
Yeah,
my dad is now just calling Iglesias Julio Iglesias. Like, he's just giving up. He's not even trying to correct himself anymore. But then the other fight he's fighting is the Daniel Bard fight, which I also agree with him on. Why is Daniel Bard deciding he wants to be a starter? He's better. He helps us more in the bullpen. Why is he making that decision?
Well, he partially made it, but the other part of it is that they didn't want to go spend any money. I mean, I don't know if they wanted Roy Oswalt or not, but he shunned them either way. And then they didn't like anybody else that was out there, so they have no choice. You got to have somebody be a fourth or fifth starter. And they figured,
we had the guy, Alfredo Aceves. How many years in a row can he pitch well before they – I mean, he wants to be a starter.
Yeah, but he's not very good. Neither one of them is a very good starter. I mean, he was okay.
How do we know? He was good last year.
But, well, he gave up 10 runs the other day in three innings in spring training.
Ah, it's spring training.
His career numbers suggest that he's not great as a starter.
All the pitchers were shaken this week from all the DUIs. It was a big wake-up call for all of them.
There's a couple things to like about Aceves is that he's like kind of a wacky personality. I have a friend who knows somebody with the Red Sox, and he got to go into their dugout last year before a game in Boston, or it was a rain out, and he got to walk in the clubhouse, and there was a pack of Marlboro Lights sitting in the dugout. And he said, "Who are those?" And they're like, "Oh, probably Aceves."
Nice.
He's one of these secret smoker guys.
Oh, I love the secret smokers.
He wears number 91 in honor of Dennis Rodman. I mean, come on, what's not to like about Aceves? I was sad when the Yankees let him go because he was a pretty good bullpen guy for him. And I think they
just haggled over
money.
Thank God you did. I mean, you really would have had one of the best bullpens ever if he was, if he was like basically the middle relief guy.
I think Cashman was for the juggling some off the field things at the time when Aceves slipped through the cracks.
Juggling is a word that can go in a lot of directions there.
Absolutely.
So let's go back to the Yanks for a second.
Yeah, we've really spent too much time analyzing a likely fourth-place team. So.
Oh, come on, Johnny. A-Rod.
Yeah.
In Germany.
Yeah.
And Kobe.
Yes.
This is
also
all leading toward – this is all leading toward – I don't know what the odds are, but – if this turns out to be this decade's biggest sports scandal.
Yeah. What do you mean if? Do you mean when?
Well, if or when.
Yeah.
All the Boston teams have won a title. This is really the last thing for me.
It's all you want?
An A-Rod, Kobe, and whoever else, Germany, weird blood doping, whatever the hell's going on in Germany scandal. The final piece of the puzzle. I think I retire as a sports fan after that.
Yeah, that would be
then
a good one.
I just start rooting
for
my daughter's soccer teams. And that's
something
it.
Something that takes down Kobe and A-Rod in one fell swoop would be
oh, my God. Who else can be in that? Can we put other people in there that I don't like?
Could Bill Laimbeer somehow be involved? I'm trying to think.
Yeah, retroactively.
Yeah.
Maybe Isaiah Thomas can be in it somehow. The entire 87 Pistons team.
David Tyree.
Oh, yeah. Let's get some Giants in there. Can Eli Manning go to Germany?
What about who's the guy who's the assassin that you wrote about with the Patriots? He took out Tom Brady's knee.
Oh, Bernard Pollard. Yeah, we
Bernard
need to get
Pollard.
Him in there. I need Bernard Pollard. Hey, Rod, call Bernard Pollard and tell him, give him the German doctor's name. I was actually thinking, so is this German doctor, is this somebody like that you or I could go to?
Probably if we had the right amount of money. I'm not sure my insurance plan covers German doctors for any issues I have.
I need to look at the Disney benefit plan and see if it works that way. Yeah, because I've made an emotional comeback to the pickup basketball scene.
German doctor right about now.
Well, that's the thing. My right knee has been a little bothersome, and I was thinking maybe one of these weeks just jet on over to Germany, charge a TSPN, say that I'm doing some sort of Kobe investigative thing, and then really I'm just there to get my own blood injected into my knees.
I think part of it depends on what happens with Obamacare before the Supreme Court. I'm not sure if that's covered, if we all get to fly to Germany and meet with some kind of strange doctor in Germany.
I like that Kobe and A-Rod were somehow like, do you think they're buddies? Or like there's like email? Or are they on some email list? Like, how does that relationship work, I wonder?
Well, all these athletes in different sports now, they kind of like commingle. I think it all started with Lenny Dykstra's magazine geared towards athletes. I think they all met somehow there. The secret cabal of athletes sharing investment tips and, you know, tips about whatever the life of a professional athlete involves. So, you know, they all run in the same circles, different nightclubs in Miami or whatever, you know, Los Angeles.
Aren't they kind of similar, though, in the respect that they don't, unlike a lot of athletes who have, like, their posse of people they grew up with or, like, some sort of entourage? Kobe is famous for, like, not having an entourage.
Really?
A-Rod's the same way, right?
Lone wolf?
Yeah, lonely. But, yeah, Kobe never, never had his group.
Except for A-Rod's cousin or whatever, Uni or whatever his name was, the one he tried to pin the steroid thing on. for the
That guy took the bullet for him.
That's like the only guy I've ever heard of him hanging out with.
Let's talk about the biggest story other than the A-Rod Kobe thing, if that ever like turns into a real thing. The other big story that could derail this Yankee season, the fact that Minka Kelly is dating Wilmer Valderrama.
I know, that's a huge step down for her, isn't it, to go from Derek Jeter to Wilmer Valderrama?
Is it, though?
No,
it
is.
Is it a step down? Is it, though?
Well, I mean, I've never dated Wilmer Valderrama, but he seems to have done all right in the Hollywood starlet department, so maybe Wilmer's bringing the heat more than I'm giving him credit for.
All right. He's legendary.
Yeah, no, I know, but I don't know. I just think, like, Derek Jeter, you know, the guy's a first ballot Hall of Famer, 3,000 hits. He's a New York icon, a baseball icon, and you're going for a guy that was on That 70s Show. He's in that awful movie with Tom Hanks and Julia Roberts. Larry Clown or whatever that was called.
I wouldn't look at it as what Wilmer's career is like. I would look at it as the amount of women that he's dated, which I'm trying to Google online to figure this out. Why isn't there a site devoted to all the women that Wilmer Valderrama has dated?
Nobody on the
internet was prepared for this moment?
I just think if I'm a woman, and I'm a Yankee fan, so I'm biased, but I would much rather date Derek Jeter than the voice of Handy Manny. But that's just me.
I agree with you on that. Oh, he dated Demi Lovato.
Yeah.
He dated Lindsay Lohan.
That meant something at once.
I can't find a good site. We're going to come back to this.
Mandy Moore, I think, didn't he?
Oh, Mandy Moore.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's one of those guys, though, that he just seems like the road through young Hollywood stardom always seems to go through Wilmer somehow.
Just to clarify, I read about this in the New York Post last week, like on page 6 or something, when they had a thing about how she was seen with Wilmer, and they had a list of his like past conquests. So I don't want people to think that I had it right at the tip of my tongue as to Wilmer. I'm like, Mandy Moore? I said it a little too quick because I read it in the New York Post last week.
Avril Lavigne.
No, I don't understand what that's all about. I never understood the attraction to Avril Lavigne.
Ashley Simpson.
It's pretty good.
Oh, rumored to be with Mila Kunis.
Oh, no. Ashley Simpson's the one who lip-synced. I'm thinking of Jessica Simpson.
Yeah, but she had that younger sister low self-esteem thing. That's always a pleasure.
And didn't John Mayer describe Jessica Simpson as, like, sexual napalm? So maybe that genetic carries over to Ashley.
And now she's just weight napalm. Have you seen her?
Yeah. Oh, my God, yeah. It's troubling.
She told a magazine she weighed 170, and my wife almost came out of retirement to write a rant. She was like, 170? 270.
Why'd you put both legs on the scale?
Jennifer Love Hewitt, another one for Wilmer.
That's pretty good. I like that.
I think Valderrama is Spanish for tripod. That's my guess.
It might be. The last I heard was like Christmas time. Last I heard, like I was like talking to mutual friends. Last I read was that Jeter and Minka Kelly were in Paris together over the holidays, like over Christmas. They had reunited. And now she's grinding Wilmer Valderrama at some nightclub in L.A.
Well, let me ask, like, why isn't Jeter doing Jeter stuff then?
Oh, he probably is, but except for the gift basket thing, that was a big story. He usually keeps that kind of quiet, I think.
I like that you had to throw an except for the gift basket thing. That was kind of a big except.
Well, that's true. Well, that's on par with your if Carl Crawford could turn it around. That's a big if. It's a big if and a big except, yeah.
We both lost our catchers this year.
Yes. Well, the Yankees didn't really have Jorge catching last year, but yeah.
Well, but you know what I mean. Our signature, you lost George Posada.
We did.
We lost Mr. Veritek.
The captain.
And neither of us were really that verklempt about it.
No. I mean, Jorge was a good, leader and vocal guy and a good Yankee, but, his best days were behind him, certainly.
Yeah.
So, they should retire his number. He's a borderline Hall of Famer if you look at his numbers. I'm going to get 5,000 tweets about that now, but
no, it is true. I mean, but
he is like, I used to despise him because I used to say he was the only catcher who couldn't catch. And I always claimed he was taking 10 years off my life with pass balls and drop balls and just not being very good defensively. But over the years, he's really grown on me. I liked it when he yelled at Pedro on the mound from the dugout, pointed at his head and all that, that was exciting. And he was always like a fiery guy and took losses hard, and he was a good, true Yankee, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I specifically remember you vehemently not liking him at one point in your life.
Absolutely.
And now
screaming at Pedro
around
from the dugout turned it around for me, though.
Yeah. Well, the Hall of Fame thing's interesting because now that they've changed the way that we judge baseball players, and especially if you just look at them after the fact, just looking at the numbers, that can get a little dangerous sometimes.
Yeah.
Because you can just look at the Jorge numbers and be like, oh, look at that on base. Oh, I had power. I was there for the entire Jorge experience. It's a little like the Scott Rolen argument. Because people like Jonah wrote the other day that maybe Scott Rolen might be in the discussion potentially.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, I was there for Scott Rolen. I don't know. Like, I never left the Scott Rolen experience thinking that I was watching Hall of Famer. But then you add up those numbers and it's like,
Well, this sounds like I'm sucking up to you, which I'm obviously not. But you have a good idea which you've written about before, your Hall of Fame pyramid thing, where you have different tiers of the Hall of Fame. Because really, like, the Hall of Fame should be a guy where I always say the thing, bouncing your grandkid on your knee, talking about, oh, I saw that guy play.
Right.
Now, I don't know if I'm going to be bouncing my grandkids on my knee saying I saw Scott Rolen or Jorge Posada play. But just based on the numbers and look at guys that are in now, so maybe if there was a lesser tier, like you could see them on the first floor of the Hall of Fame or whatever, that would be before you got up to the third floor of the Babe Ruths and Ted Williamses and Joe DiMaggio's. Maybe that makes sense. But
I still remember being in the car with my buddy Gus and his dad, Wally Ramsey, my favorite English teacher of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And when he came up with the pyramid idea, it was just so brilliant. And I think the best thing about it is if they, for whatever reason, just decided to do it. When you just talk about the amount of attention and just how crazy people would go, like trying to figure out who's in what level, like it would really blow up the internet for about a year.
Between sports radio would have a topic for like a month.
And it's also a huge out for them because there's so many people who probably don't belong in the Hall of Fame that you can throw them into level one. It would kind of almost be like, oh, yeah, here's all the mistakes we made and the people who are borderline. But then once you start moving up, those are the people, that are the real people.
The true ones, right. No, it's a great idea.
Well, I think, like, even you look at – just glance around baseball now, it's pretty easy to tell who the undoubtedly Hall of Famer guys are versus the other ones.
Right.
If we have to talk about it for more than 10 seconds, then they're probably not totally a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, it should be a no-brainer. But it makes for interesting
Pujols,
debate, something to talk about in the offseason.
Totally.
Absolutely.
Basketball's a little more messed up because they include the college.
Yeah.
And like international and Olympics, and they have all these other variables. So like Manu Ginobili is definitely a Hall of Famer, even though you would think like on the face of it, maybe he's not totally a Hall of Famer. Anyway, we got sidetracked. The Tampa Bay Rays.
Yeah.
As usual, people seem to feel like this is going to be some sort of a transition season or whatever. I think the over-under in Vegas for them is 87.
Really?
I think they're going to be a lot better than that. I don't get that at all. What do you think?
Yeah, 87 sounds a little low.
Yeah. I'm worried about them. I'm worried about Longoria. I think he's due for one of those monster years. It's going to happen this year or next year. But if he has it in him, it's just law of baseball and the career arc and stuff like that. It should be this year. Their starting rotation is deep.
And they have great pitching.
Like they have this guy, Alex Cobb, that they sent down, who would be like easily the number four starter in the Red Sox. Easily. And I don't even think he's breaking training camp or breaking spring training with them. But they got like six or seven deep just with starters. They got that Matt Moore card they're playing this year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm concerned about them.
Joe Maddon. Smart GM. Not a lot of money, but they always make the most out of what they have.
Yeah.
Considering they have no stadium and no fan base, they seem to do pretty well. Yeah, they're good. Yeah. And Toronto is up and coming. Tough AL East for the Orioles.
Yeah, that's true. Thank God for the Orioles.
You know, Toronto allegedly has a lot of money. They have Bautista, who's good. They have Colby Rasmus. They have some
Brett
pitching
Lowry.
Now, right?
Brett Lowry.
Yeah. Yeah, they're good. I think it's going to be a battle between them and the Sox for third place.
Oh. Johnny. The thing with Toronto is they have some young guys, too, that if those guys come through, they could be interesting. The AL East is definitely not a cakewalk this year.
They're breaking out some like new uniforms this year, too, that are like very Canadian, right? They're trying to be Canada's team because they are the only team in Canada. I think
they just
like
realized that.
Maple Leaf and red jerseys and stuff now.
They just realized that like 10 years too late.
Yeah, right. Wait a second. Hey.
What else?
So
what
a team up here, eh?
What else is jumping out at you about this 2012 baseball season? Are you excited about Pujols in the American League?
Yeah, I don't know what he has left either. I know he's phenomenal, but, I mean, he's not getting any younger either.
And you don't know what LA, he has left? They just gave him
Louis, like, what's that?
They just gave him $250 million.
No, I know.
I don't left?
I think that was a stupid contract. I mean, I think he'll be okay. He's going to be good. But, you know, the Angels are decent. They're always good. Sosa is a good manager. They always have good players. They finally went out and spent a lot of money on a player. I think they spent too much. I mean, he'll be good this year and probably next year, but after that, I think they're just throwing good money after bad. But
I'm very concerned about them because their four starters are ridiculous.
Yeah, and no, they're good.
Trevor Irvin Santana is your four starter?
No, they're good. No question about it. They play in a weak division.
I think Pujols is going to have a monster year.
Well, they don't really play in a weak division. I take that back because Texas is good too.
Yeah, but then they have Seattle and they have
Seattle and Oakland aren't good, but
those are terrible teams.
Yeah.
Oakland has your classic, just every guy on that team is a roll of the dice at this point.
Yeah, they're brutal.
Including the Cuban guy, who I'm excited to see.
Oh yeah. Cespedes or whatever.
Tell me about
And Manny. They have Manny, for God's sake.
Oh, they sure do.
Eventually after 60 games.
Tell me about your Michael Pineda impressions heading into opening day.
Well, I'm relying on your assertions that he's going to be great from his performance on your fantasy team, but he showed up overweight and he's had trouble breaking 92 on the gun. That's just a little disconcerting.
His velocity's going up.
He was better. His last outing was better, and they said he actually pitched really good the other day. He pitched like five innings and only gave up one run or a couple hits or something. But you know, who knows what you can put into spring training? Maybe these guys might not air it out right away, but allegedly, he was a little, like, mystified by the amount of media and everything with the Yankees. He's not quite used to that, as he was, you know, a little different from Seattle.
They
kind of were playing head games with him from the beginning, too, saying, well, he's not guaranteed to make the club right out of spring training, and maybe he'll be in Scranton. So, I don't know. And now with Pettit coming back, I mean, they kind of have an embarrassment of riches when it comes to pitching. But, you know, these things have a way of biting in the ass where you always need extra pitching with injuries and stuff. So,
that he came in overweight.
No, that wasn't a good sign. Especially going to a new team, you think you want to make a good impression. It's one thing if you go back to the old team and they know what they're dealing with, but coming to a new team, you think you'd want to make a good impression and be like in fighting trim, you know?
So the other thing that could hurt him is if Montero starts out hot on Seattle, which is a possibility. And they also got Hector Nosi in that trade, who I think is going to make their rotation. I always liked him. He's another guy that I would feel totally comfortable as the Red Sox fourth starter. he could if he started out well for them and Montero started out well, and meanwhile Pineda pitches twice in a month, which could totally happen that first month, and the Yankee fans started getting upset about that trade, that's not going to help Pineda.
No, not at all. No, that'll be problematic. If he comes out of the gate, he stumbles out of the gate, but I don't know what they're going to do with their rotation. I mean, I guess maybe they'll move Phil Hughes to the bullpen because he has bullpen experience. Although he looks pretty good this spring, too. He lost some weight.
Good. Thanks for finally losing some weight, Phil.
Yeah, really. He's on a new program in the offseason.
He's on P90.
I hope he's back to what he was a couple years ago. And they have Nova still. So, yeah, pitching for once is not a question mark for the Yankees, I don't think, which is good. I feel inordinately confident about the Yankees, which is probably
problematic. Oh, that makes me so happy. Oh, I love when you're inordinately confident.
This is a problem.
People seem to feel like Nova is a regression guy this year.
Yeah, I wouldn't be. Yeah, it could be. He's another guy that had a phenomenal first year, and now it's the second year of a sophomore slump. That's a legitimate concern.
Walk me through your emotions when the word breaks that Andy Pettit has returned from 6 months in Germany with his family and now is ready to come back to baseball.
Well, ironically, I had taken the afternoon off to go watch the NCAA tournament on the Friday the 16th.
Yes.
And I was driving to a bar to meet my friends, so I was giddy about that. And then on the radio, I'm listening to The Fan, and they say, Yes's Jack Curry had put on Twitter, Pettit back with the Yankees. And I was like, what? I just couldn't believe it because it came completely out of left field. Like, there was no inkling of his coming back or anything. And you know, when they could have used him last year when they had Garcia and Colon trying to fill roster spots.
Yeah.
And he's coming back this year when they don't really need a pitcher. But, no, it's good. I mean, they signed him for low money. It's like it's high reward, low risk. Because, you know, if he still has it and can bring anything, I mean, he's, you know, one of the core four back again. That's always good. And if not, it's only $2.5 million.
What made him want to come back? You think this is just the case of the guy who hasn't seen his family in 20 years, who's back with the family, and after a month, he's like, oh, my God, I got to get out of here.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I made this joke to you in an email the other day and in another forum, and I said, it turns out that spending time with your family is overrated. We learned that from Andy and from Jabba. Andy Pettit retires for a year to spend more time with his family.
Yeah.
And he calls the Yankees a year later begging to sign a minor league contract. Jabba goes and spends time with his son and almost dies on a trampoline. We can look at other examples. Go back to Michael Jordan. He retires and spends time with his family and decides, I'm going to try to play baseball instead.
Brett Favre,
three different times.
Yeah.
You know?
I might retire from ESPN to spend more time with Andy Pettit's family.
I listened to him on an interview with Francesa a few weeks ago, and he said that he apparently went down to spring training, and he was going to be like an instructor, and he was throwing the ball, and he was throwing it really great, and all of a sudden he was like, I might have a little something left in the tank. And he claims that Cashman talked to him and approached him and said, like, hey, would you have any interest in coming back? And he and his family prayed about it, and they decided to give it another shot. His kids were encouraging him, and lo and behold, he's back in the fold.
Him and his family prayed about it?
Sure. God told him to come back, I guess, or, you know, gave him the inspiration to come back. He had to cancel an elk hunt that he had scheduled for a couple of months from now in Wyoming.
Oh.
So it's good news for the elk,
I guess. Yeah. big win for the elk. Isn't he got dragged back into another Clemens testimony too, right?
Yeah, I think so. There's going to be another trial, so hopefully that'll be on an off day.
Great news. I wanted to read more about the Roger Clemens trial. It was
thankfully, he decided to come back in the off season, so we didn't have to hear Susan Waldman crying about it on the air, so that was good.
Oh, my God.
Andy's in his box. I can't believe it. Yeah, it was good.
How was the Andy Pettit Mike Francesa interview?
I was all right, you know.
Hey,
he screwed up, ironically, this will be good for ESPN. He called him Michael a couple times, and then he's like, oh, I'm sorry, Mike, I just got off the phone with Michael Kay, and I keep calling you that. And that's, you know, Francesa's bitter about that because they have a heated rivalry on the radio.
Oh.
Francesa was like, that's okay, just move on. He didn't say just move on, but like he was like, that's okay, and then he just moved on from it.
Andy,
so that was troubling.
Andy, I can't say I love that comment.
He's a big Andy Pettit fan, though, so Andy was good and just kept saying how, you know, he's excited and he wouldn't come back unless he thought he could do it and yada, yada. So it's good.
Andy, do you think this is a huge, huge comeback for you? when are Mike and the Dog coming back?
I don't know. I keep waiting for Sirius to go belly up so Mad Dog has to come back. Or XM or whatever he's on.
I literally don't even know what channel Mad Dog's on. Can he go back to the fan? Plus, now that we have the YouTube and now that we have internet streaming and all that stuff, like, just reunite, guys.
Absolutely.
Enough.
Absolutely. You've proven your point. You've been away. Let's get back together.
All right, Johnny. So give me a 2012 prediction for wins for the Yankees of New York.
I think they're going to win 100 games.
100 games?
Sure. I got high hopes. I think the Yanks are good. They have the re-engineered A-Rod. They have a good starting rotation. Absolutely. High hopes for the Yanks. Cano, devastating
games.
Lineup.
Wow.
Yeah.
How about Red Sox?
Honestly, I think that's like an 85-win team. Not gonna lie to you.
Johnny. Come on, Johnny.
I'm not even
really
kidding you. I'm telling you.
That?
I think that team is grossly overrated. Everybody that says, oh, my God, their offense is so good. I mean, part of that offense is counting on Euclid, who played about 30 games last year and already has a bad back in spring training, and Ortiz, who could be 50 years old. And you're counting on Ellsbury having a phenomenal offensive year when he had a career year last year. And Gonzalez, who the second half of the year was the American League's best singles hitter.
He's swinging through the ball for the first time in 2 years. He's swinging through the ball again.
You look at the pitching. Every year we hear how John Lester is going to win 20 games and win the Cy Young, and he always folds under pressure. Beckett is Beckett, and he doesn't have his binky back there at Veritech anymore. Buchholz always gets hurt, and you have no fourth or fifth starter. You have no shortstop, and Crawford is Crawford, and you have no right fielder. And your catcher is a terrible hitter.
Salty?
Yeah.
Come on. Salty has...
And he couldn't
streaky.
Throw anybody out. But he's mediocre he's defensively and terrible offensively.
Nah, come on.
And your Salty. Bullpen is enormously suspect.
It sounds like we have to make a wager, Johnny. Let's come up with an over-under number.
All right. Sure the Vegas number on the Red Sox is higher. I mean, they're predicted to win. People predict them to win like 90 games, right?
Yeah, Vegas over-under.
90 to 95?
Vegas over-under is 90. For the Yankees, it's 93.5. So you're basically saying
I'm taking the over on the Yanks and the under on the Sox.
But you're going way under on the Red Sox and way over on the Yankees.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So Vegas
feeling
is
good.
So you're saying how many – give me an over-under and let's wager on this. How many games will the Yankees finish ahead of the Red Sox this season? You give me an
over-under.
Oh, I
think they're going to finish 10 games ahead of the Red Sox.
You want to bet on this?
I'll give you 10 games.
You'll give me 10 games?
10-game spread, yeah.
All right,
I'm telling you, I'm high on the Yanks, and I'm really – I think the Red Sox team is – don't believe the propaganda. And I think the Bobby V thing is going to wear on the players. It's going to be a disaster.
All right, you're giving me 10 games.
Loser, I say the Yankees finished 10 games better than the Red Sox.
Loser has to go visit the winner.
Okay. So if I lose, I have to go to Los Angeles. That's terrible for me.
Yeah, we need a better bet. I'll come up with a better bet.
If you lose, you're coming here. You're coming to Connecticut in like February.
Now, how about this? loser has to, or winner gets to buy the loser some sort of framed 16x20 photo that has to then be displayed prominently in the loser's living room for a year.
Okay,
any
that's
photo.
A deal.
Frame All right. photo. Could be anything.
All right.
At least 16x20 size.
All right, okay.
10 games. You give me 10 games, Johnny.
I'm going to buy you the picture of A-Rod like a centaur. You can buy me the Veritech pushing A-Rod in the face picture.
I might buy you the one of A-Rod when he's like half naked, whatever that one is.
Looking in the mirror.
Yeah, actually, I would buy you Pedro pushing over Zimmer, but
oh,
it'd be like a
God.
40x50 photo of the old man just flying as Pedro triumphantly shoves him. All right, Johnny, we'll talk to you during the season.
All right.
We should mention you're exchanging emails with Shane Ryan this week on Grant.
Yeah,
about,
some of these jokes may
the
be recycled,
season.
By the way. So.
Oh, feel free. Feel All free. Right. We have a recycling policy in place.
Perfect. All right.
Talk to you soon, Johnny.
See ya.
All right, let's go over to the state of Colorado, the new headquarters of Grantland's lead baseball columnist, Jonah Carey. What's happening?
It's beautiful in Colorado. I like LA a lot, but I don't know. Maybe all of Grantland's offices need to move out here.
Ooh, you think? The mountains?
Yeah. Maybe there's got to be some kind of tax break or something like that we could get, I would think.
We're on a half-second delay, so if there are any awkward pauses, that just means that there's a half-second delay because you're on a cell phone. So I just wanted to warn the listeners about that. Let's talk about baseball over-unders. So you are the over-under champ. You've called your shot, like Babe Ruth allegedly called his shot in that one World Series, for at least the last couple years. You wrote a column on Grantland about over-unders that went up yesterday that I encourage people to read, but we're going to regurgitate it right now. Your favorite over-under of the 2012 MLB season is?
Detroit Tigers. I just do not have a much faith in Detroit Tigers. And it's a tricky bet from a logic standpoint. If you look at it, they won 95 games last year. The over-under this year is 93.5, sometimes 92.5, depending on which casino or which site you use. And so you think, well, wait a minute. They just got Prince Fielder. They won 95. The over-under is 92.5 or 93.5. There's no way that they won't go over. But a whole bunch of things happen with this team. Before we even get to the defense, which is apocalyptic, let's talk about something called expected record, expected one-loss record. All it means is you take your runs scored and runs allowed, and you see what that would add up to. So in other words, if you score 700 and you allow 700, you should be a 500 team. But sometimes teams will win 85 or 86 or 75 or 76 in that scenario. So the Tigers, based on their runs scored and runs allowed last year, should have been an 89-win team, not 95, 89. But they obviously had some things go in their favor. They won some one-run games. Some other things happened. It worked well for them. There are other good things that happened to the Tigers last year that I don't expect to repeat. Justin Verlander is a terrific pitcher. I'm not saying that last year was a fluke. It was not a fluke here. Every bit of everything that he got last year. But if he duplicates that, I'd be shocked. That is probably the best year of his career. I don't see that happening. If you look at some of the hitters, Alex Avila and Johnny Peralta in particular, had terrific seasons. Avila just had a monster monster year. I do think he's a good catcher, a good all-around player, but I expect those two guys to regress as well. And then some of the other pitchers, Doug Fister is another one. He comes over in a trade, 57-5 strikeout-to-walk ratio when he's with the Tigers. I mean, that's legit. You can only explain that away so much. But he did have an easy schedule in those starts, and the defense was a little bit better behind him. And the other guy is Jose Valverde, 49-49 for save situations.
Wow.
I would submit to you, Bill, yeah, that's unbelievable. I would submit to you that he's not peak Eric Gagne or Dennis Eckersley. I would submit to you that he doesn't have unbelievable mental fortitude that means that he's going to go perfect every year. It's just one of those things. It's one of those fluky, weird things. He's not going to go 49-49 again. I don't have a problem with the guy, but he's not going to go 49-49. So all those things happen to that team. And then, of course, the coup de grace is their infield defense. Their infield defense was not very good last year either because Miguel Cabrera was not a particularly good first baseman. Second base, they had Ramon Santiago there sometimes. He was pretty good, actually. But they had Ryan Rayburn play some. He wasn't very good. Johnny Peralta played shortstop. Actually, his numbers were pretty decent defensively, but one-year defensive numbers don't necessarily trust all that much. I look at 3 years, and Peralta has never been a terrific defender. And third base split it between Wilson Benjamin, who's a disaster of a third baseman, and Brandon Hitch, who's absolutely fantastic. So kind of a mixed bag there. Well, this year, Rupert is going to play every day at second. Peralta's going to play every day at short, and you can expect some regression. Prince Fielder's now the first baseman. He's about equivalent to Cabrera. They're both pretty bad defensively. And, of course, the third baseman, and yes, I know it was a bad hop, and yes, I know it was unfortunate, but I'm sorry. If you get a ground ball to the face, that is just an indicator that you're probably, and I know it's as simple as a one, probably not a great third baseman. I don't think Cabrera's going to be a disaster at third. I think there's going to be a cascading effect. Ball gets through the infield, two outs in the fifth inning, that knocks Porcello out of the game. You got to go to the bullpen early. That bullpen starts to get taxed. Maybe some injury and workload issues. I think this team is going to be good. I think they're going to win the division. But you add all that stuff up, I don't think they're going to win 94 games.
Yeah, and as you said, I don't know how they won 95 games last year. And really the only noticeable upgrade would be if Austin Jackson, another full year, he got better. And then Prince Fielder's bat for Victor Martinez's bat. Which, yeah, it's an upgrade, but I don't think it's enough to stave off everything else you just mentioned, right?
Yeah, I don't think so either. Yeah, I think, and that's it. I didn't even mention Martinez. I mean, he's a good player. He had a good year last year, and you can get a little cute about, well, let's tally up the pluses and the minuses. But I mean, if we really did want to do that, I just there's a lot more sources of regression pending on this team than positive. And again, I go back to the expected record. Even if you just say that all these guys are going to perform about the same, and you upgrade from Martinez to Fielder, maybe that's a 2-win upgrade. Well, just based on expected record, and this is a shortcut, but that puts you at about 91 wins. I mean, this is still not a team that you would expect to win that much. I just think there are all these factors working against them. Again, I look at the rest of that division. I think the Indians are a feisty little sleeper, maybe. The Royals probably are getting a little bit too much hype. I think it's early to put out too much. And I don't have virtually no faith in the White Sox and the Twins. Tigers probably walk away with this thing, but they can walk away with 87 or 88 or 89 up until 93, and you're still a winner in this scenario if you're betting under 93.5.
I'm glad you mentioned the Indians because I think they are sleepier than sleepy. I mean, some people are mentioning them, but, man, I really think they could win this division. And, you know, you look at the every year a league has one team that maybe you didn't totally expect or maybe you didn't expect them to be as good as they're going to be. And if you just kind of look at the AL, I think Anaheim is going to be all that in a bag of chips. I think the Yankees are going to be there. It's going to be Red Sox or Rays for the wild card probably, as always, unless the Rangers can, you know, we can talk about the Rangers in a second. But when you just try to figure out who's going to be the weird team, it feels like it's going to be Cleveland, right?
Well, I think if you had to pick one, you could say that, but there are six strong contenders and five playoff spots. Someone from that, assuming that the Tigers win a division, and you're saying maybe not, but let's say they do, you're talking about Yankees, Red Sox, Rays, Rangers, Angels. Four out of those five, not five out of five, get into the playoffs. And we can talk about that a little bit more later, about the Angels and the Red Sox, because I might have a different opinion than you. Sounds like I do. But as far as the Indians go, yeah, they do have some upside. And I spent time in spring training. This also up at Grand when it came out a couple weeks ago. Did a Q&A with Chris Antonetti, the GM, and we talked about a bunch of things. And one of the things I've been harping on is they have a big ground ball staff. They had it last year, too, but they upgraded. They got Ubaldo Jimenez. Obviously, we don't know what's going to happen with Fausto Carmona or Roberto Hernandez or Shlomo Mordecai, whatever his name is right now. But this is a big ground ball staff, and there's some efficiency to be had there potentially, especially with the upgrade defensively at first base to get Casey Kochman. He's not a great hitter, but he can field the ball. So this is a team that's set up pretty well defensively. Chinsu Chu had a disastrous season last year, had off-field incidents, was injured, had a whole bunch of things go wrong. I see a lot of upside on this team, but they still have enough holes that it makes me wonder if they can pass the Tigers. Now, if you look at the
overall... Well, hold on, wait a second, though.
Yeah, go ahead.
You didn't mention Kipnis, who I think is a breakout guy.
I love Kipnis. Love Kipnis.
And if Chisenhall hits for them, their young third baseman, who we traded, sadly, a couple weeks ago on our League of Dorks team. But I do think that he has the potential at least to hit the ball, hit some line drives, maybe get to 285, something like that if he wins a job. Like, you know, and then I can never say his name. Say the name for me. Shinshu. You figure comeback year for him. They finally extricated themselves from the Grady Sizemore thing. Cause it's just after holding them hostage for years and years, I think they finally moved on mentally from that, obviously. They could get to 90 wins. We didn't mention Justin Masterson yet. And we didn't mention the fact that the Chris Perez, Vinny Pastano thing might work out in their favor. Like I feel like Pastano will eventually end up being the closer, and that makes them better because he's a better pitcher than Chris Perez is.
Well, that's the funny thing about closers, because you can make the argument that the guy as a setup man actually ends up with more high leverage situations than a closer does. Mm. Pastano was shutting things down with the bases loaded in the seventh or the eighth inning, and Perez was getting the cream puff save opportunities up three with the bases empty in the ninth inning. Maybe you're better off with Pastano setting up anyway. It doesn't make sense from a pro standpoint, but from real life, it often works out that way. By the way, we haven't mentioned the best player on the Cleveland Indians, which is Carlos Santana, who's fantastic.
Right.
And one of these years could contend for an MVP. I mean, he's that good. So it is a very good team. You mentioned Sizemore. There are two outfield spots that are potential holes there. They're going to start, I don't know, Shelly Duncan or something in left field. With Sizemore, I'd move Brantley to center. Brantley maybe can be functional, but you're basically talking about two minuses there. So there are some weaknesses on this club. But, yeah, I do think there are a lot of good pieces. And it's funny, I was touting the Indians early in the offseason for whatever reason, and it might have been because Vegas had weird odds. It might have been like a minus 140 kind of scenario or something. I can't remember why, but I didn't bet the over on them, and I think the over is something like 78. I like that over, too. It wasn't in the column, but if you were looking for another club or maybe you didn't like one of my other picks, the Indians could be a good one, too. I do think they are an interesting team and a good team. And let me put it to you this way. If you have to bet on a team with a five, you always go with the younger club, right? Look how young they are. I mean, Kipnis and Santana and Chisenhall, some of these guys are going to break out.
Well, it does seem like there's a recipe to this. And the recipe is usually young team, low expectations, a couple guys who are like 27 and under kind of break out. You have another guy who was already there who has like the career kind of – like Santana is a perfect candidate for that this year, the guy who just jumps a level. And then it's baseball and it snowballs. And, you know, like late April, people start writing about it. Hey, this is the most fun I've had in years, like those kind of quotes. And then it just kind of takes a life of its own. And I think that's, you know, another team that we kind of skipped over. I think the White Sox potentially could be a little bit better than maybe people have been penciled in to be. I don't know if you've obviously been following, you're a baseball guy, but they have a lot of young arms in the bullpen. And not just Addison Reed, but the other guy, the lefty, Hector.
Chris Sale. Well, he's probably going to go to the starting rotation.
No, there's another guy who's Hector, I want to say Gonzalez, but.
Yes.
People think him and Addison Reed right now are fighting for the closer job with Matt Thorne, but they might quietly have a good bullpen. And then if Chris Sale converts to starter, like that could be interesting. I don't know. I'm not willing to – the Ozzie Guillen, the Ewing theory possibilities for that. I don't know. It feels like somebody weird is going to come out of that AL Central, and I don't know who it's going to be.
Yeah, Don't forget, Ozzie Guillen did win a championship, so that would be a must for you.
Oh, that's true. That does disqualify him from.
Yeah.
From the.
That club, that's had some interesting pieces. My only concern, I've always stayed away from this. The classic team, I have some rules for this stuff, and one of my rules is I try not to bet against or I guess the over on teams where I think they might make trades of veterans. And the White Sox are in that position where Kenny Williams has already started making trades, traded Sergio Santos, but that's not necessarily going to hurt them all that much, mind you. But I think it's just sort of indicative of the mindset where, you know, maybe one of the other guys goes, maybe one of the veteran starting pitchers goes, or they already traded Carlos Quentin, of course. Again, these are not necessarily major problems. They could probably patch with Diane Quintero instead of Quentin. They could probably patch with Reed and Thornton instead of Santos. But it just sort of tells me Williams might be in a different mode where he might not be willing to build up. That's my concern. Not only not willing to build up, but might be willing to strip down, even if they're on the periphery of the race, even if they're 6 or 7 games. So, and that's when we take a team that's true talent, you might say, oh, they're an 80-win ball club, but they start to make trades, and they start to look ahead to the future, and they're putting in kids, and they end up by the end of the season winning 75. Oh, and the over-under was 76, and you just missed. So that's the kind of stuff that makes me a little bit nervous. I think it's a decent bet, but I just don't like that kind of uncertainty. That's why I stayed away.
So let's skimp over the Rays, because, look, you wrote it. The over, I think, is 87 for wins this year. And
Right. Every
year they exceed expectations. I don't even think it's worth wasting more than like 2 minutes on, because Joe Maddon, we know he's there still. We know Longoria is going to have a career year probably. We know that they have more starting pitching depth than anybody in the league, and that, you know, any team that can send down Alex Cobb is obviously doing pretty well with starters. And I just think 87 is ridiculous. And the only way you can make that case would be that if the Red Sox and Yankees were such juggernauts that you could argue, you know, and the Red Sox just aren't a juggernaut. So I don't know. So 87, you made the case in the column. We don't need to talk about that. What I'm interested in is you don't like this Anaheim team that much. Explain.
I don't love the rest of the lineup behind Albert Pujols is the simple answer to this. And they have some wild cards that could go well. Morales looks like he's getting healthier, so he's going to see some time. You know, Trumbo, maybe the year after big home run season, starts to actually not make outs constantly, and he could help them. I guess it's possible that Mike Trout comes up and does some good things. They have a lot of maybes, but I still look at that lineup, and I still see Vernon Wells, and Alberto Callaspo is going to play, and he's probably going to have some aggression from last year. Ivar is a really nice defensive player, but he can't hit. Bobby Abreu is really not much of anything anymore. He's going to be a part-time player. Torrey Hunter's on the way down. I like Kendrick. I think Kendrick is a very solid player. Matt Berry mentioned him on the podcast the other day, certainly from a Roto standpoint, but he's a very good real-life player, too. So it's not like they have nothing. Peter Burgess is also a pretty good all-around player, no question. But it just makes me nervous. I just don't love that starting lineup. It really bothers me a little bit. That's what the expectations. Go ahead.
Are you worried that Pujols doesn't have protection, that people are just going to pitch around him the whole season?
No, I don't. I'm not a big believer in protection. That's one of the things that Statheads kind of turn their nose up at. It's more that Pujols might hit, but how many other people are going to hit? I mean, when Pujols was with the Cardinals last year, Lance Berkman went crazy. You know, a bunch of other guys had really good seasons, and you can't say that all of that is Pujols, because at a certain point, Holiday, I mean, these are good quality players, Pujols or not, and I think the Cardinals are going to be fine this year without him. But I think the Angels might not have that much firepower, and I think that if it comes down to the over-under going off at 92 or something, which is about what it's at in Vegas, I think that's a little high. And moreover, when you look at that AL playoff race, and we mentioned those six big teams, and one of those teams is not going to make it, I think you seem to be leaning Red Sox being that team that doesn't make it. I think it's the Angels that don't make it. I think the Red Sox, I know the Red Sox have won two titles, so they're clearly not a UN Fury candidate. But look, I mean, they lose Theo, they lose Tito. Nobody believes in us, Fury. That's way in play for the Red Sox. Nobody believes in the Red Sox. They had the best offense in baseball last year. They got a good starting rotation. They've, you know, patched the bullpen, obviously, with Bailey and those guys. This is a good team. The Red Sox could not only make the playoffs, they could be a World Series candidate this year. I have no idea. I think people are overreacting to fried chicken and beer. Fried chicken and beer with Kyle Weiland, Andrew Miller, and Tim Wakefield. That's why they had the biggest collapse in baseball history. It's not about fried chicken and beer. It's about three terrible starters who tried to carry the load and obviously failed.
Jonah Carey, just made me feel better about the Red Sox season. I will say, you know, I think one of the reasons we have these two giant ifs. We have the Carl Crawford giant if, and we have the Andrew Bailey, if he can stay healthy, giant if. And if both of those go south, it's really hard for me to believe that this team can make the playoffs. But I look at the Angels like, you know, at least we know that they have those four starters and they're in a division where they get to play Seattle and Oakland 38 times.
Right.
And, you know, I just feel like they're going to be able to score three or four runs a game and their starters are going to keep them in every game. Like, they just feel like more of a fixed thing to me than the Red Sox. The Red Sox have their top five in the order that are fantastic. They have the Beckett, Lester, hopefully Buchholz. And then after that, I don't feel 100% on anything.
No, I think that's fair. But, I mean, we don't know about the Angels' fifth starter. And, again, you look at the lineups. I just don't think you can overstate the difference, even with Pujols, between the Red Sox lineup and the Angels lineup. Yes, the Red Sox don't have batting champions, batting ace and nines. But so what? The top five guys are beyond good. I mean, they're unbelievable.
Yeah.
Especially the Oakbury repeats what he said last year comes close. Now we're talking about, you know, two guys or maybe three guys were MVP candidates and two others who are great. And hopefully if Euclid Stout is back a little bit with injury concern, I mean, he's a terrific player, but he's at full strength. So I just think these teams have different strengths and they match up well. Put it this way, Bill, I think you're going to get to the last week of the season. This could be like a three or even four team race with excellent, excellent teams battling each other out. I mean, some people don't love the second wild card. This could be fascinating. The Rays, Red Sox, Angels and Rangers could easily be battling for kind of dual division wild card situation, and it could be crazy. And by the way, we're kind of giving it to the Yankees a little bit here. The Yankees are not unimpeachable. I mean, if Pineda still has velocity problems, some other things happen.
Yeah.
That puts the Red Sox and the Rays a little bit in play. Maybe it's a five-team race the last week of the season. I think this could be a phenomenal season if one of these teams is not going to make it.
You could be right. When I look at the Angels, to me, the red flag spot for them is the closer. I'm not totally sold on Jordan Walton. He hasn't pitched well in spring training. That's a spot that if he self-combusts and you look at the rest of the relievers they have, that could just kill them the entire season. You know?
Actually, the Angels have probably, well, maybe the most underrated and maybe my favorite relief pitcher in all of baseball, Scott Downs. Scott Downs is like 47 years old, throws a curveball on about an 85-mile-an-hour fastball, and nobody can hit Scott Downs. Go back and look at Scott Downs over the last few years because you probably didn't own him in Roto because he doesn't get saves or wins or anything like that, and most people might not have heard of him, but he's great. And I don't know if he would close or whatever, but he's going to pitch those high-leverage innings, and he's a great pitcher. I don't think they're six or seven deep in the bullpen, but Downs to me is like a Thornton or a Sean Marshall, somebody like that. He's an impact guy in the bullpen who's just not a name player necessarily because he hasn't gotten saves in the past.
I look at the Rangers, and I know they look good on paper, but they have some variables in play that make me think that, you know, that's a team that could fall out too. Because, first of all, you're coming off a devastating World Series loss. History has not been kind to the team the year after devastating World Series losses, right? Like the 87 Red Sox won the tank. The 98 Indians, I don't remember, they didn't do anything.
What did the 76 Red Sox do after the fifth, and then they didn't win thing?
That was a terrible. I mean, that was the. Although that wasn't totally devastating because it was such a fun season. I guess the ending was devastating,
true.
But the 04 Cubs. I don't remember them doing much, but I think that is going to be hanging over them a little bit. And then, you know, I'm not crazy about the starting rotation. I don't know what you, Darvish, is going to do. I think it was you that you did a nice job of pointing out the possible flaws. Was that you? Somebody I read did. Maybe it was you. Maybe it was somebody else. Maybe you know who it was. It was that. Do you ever read that crazy that guy Paul Sporer? He writes that 75,000 word pitcher breakdown.
I have read him. Yes, he's good.
It's a PDF file, and it's like these extended thoughts on every single starting pitcher.
If I'm impressed that you're reading. That's good stuff. That's going deep. I like that.
Oh, that guy goes deep, 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 deep into all the XFIP, all that stuff. But, you know, the Darvish thing is not a slam dunk by any means. And you have Natale Feliz going to the rotation. Not a slam dunk, obviously. They moved Ogando out, it looks like, right? He's out of the rotation.
Yeah, for now. But, I mean, it seems like Ogando seems like plastic, man. They could stretch him around a little bit. And I do like Holland, Lewis, and Harrison. I mean, not necessarily the 1-2-3, but certainly the 3-4-5 or even a 2-3-4. I think those guys are fine. And I do think
they
have pretty good depth.
Yeah, I like Harrison. And Lewis is solid, but they don't really have – they don't have that guy, you know? And
yeah, I mean, it's – but, you know, if Darvish isn't that guy, then I suppose they don't have that guy. But I just don't see that as a major. I think that's a bigger issue for the playoffs, really, to be honest with you. If you look at a team like the Rangers, they really are five deep. I think they'll be fine. But it's sort of like, okay, they're going to go up against whoever playoffs. Let's say the Yankees. Someone's got to beat Sabathia. That bothers me a little bit more. But I think that you're talking about different things with the regular season versus the playoffs. And go back to the Rays for a second. Yeah, the Rays have all this starting pitching depth, and they're all great. It's possible that Shields or Price or Matt Moore is a world beater in the playoffs. But I think that having that unbelievable depth is much more important in the regular season because, let's say, I don't know, Niemann goes on the DL or this happens or that happens. They can patch. They can do all that stuff. And you know, the question becomes which clubs can. So the Red Sox, you mentioned Lester and Buckles and Beckett. So one of those three guys gets hurt. It hurts more for the Red Sox than it would for another club. Yankees, you know, January 13th was the best day the Yankees have had off the field in I don't know how long because they got not only Pineda, but also Hiroki Kuroda, who's a very underrated pitcher, and there'll be some regression in the American League. But all of a sudden, you know, Garcia or Hughes is out of a job. Garcia or Hughes are pretty good pitchers, actually. So I just love pitching depth when it comes to regular season. That's why the Rangers I'm pretty high on, even though they don't have that necessarily a guy who's going to be absolutely lights out, depending on Darvish. Same with the Cardinals, same with the Yankees, same with the Rays. I look at those teams and I say, they have six or more good starting pitchers. That makes me feel good about them.
So I don't know if the Rangers, I wouldn't call them good. We'll see.
Here's what I'm going to say about the Rangers before we leave the Rangers. I think that the regression, actually, I'm a little bit more worried, is on the hitting side. I know that everybody thinks that their hitting is just untouchable, but Josh Hamilton, you know, is fading. I think that MVP season, we're never going to see that again. He won't hit 359 anymore. He's had some injury concerns over the years, and we never know what's going to happen. Napoli is never going to hit like that again. I mean, he was just out of his mind last year. Nelson Cruz is a perennial injury risk. There's just a little bit of, you know, you could poke some holes in the armor a little bit with the Rangers. I think that is possible. But they have so much talent all the way across that even if one or two things or maybe three things go wrong, I think it's going to work out for them. I just think that they're deeper and more talented than the Angels are. I don't think it's a slam dunk that they're going to win the division because multiple things could go wrong. But assuming things kind of go roughly as planned, they're my pick to win the AL West.
You stole my thunder a little bit with the Hamilton Napoli things. There's no way. There's no way in hell Napoli hits like that again. There's just no way.
I love Napoli, by the way, but no.
He was basically 1996 Mike Piazza for 4 months or 3 months or whatever from the All-Star break on. And the Hamilton thing is a real thing. Like, it's not just the fact that he hasn't produced like he has in the MVP season, but he's in a contract year. He has the weird thing where he had the off-field incident and they don't know whether to extend him or not. I think that's a distraction. And, you know, talking about how they don't have an ace, and you said, yeah, that only matters in the playoffs. I actually think it could matter in the regular season because if you're in a situation where you're losing six straight and everybody said the media starts with the whole, the Rangers, it's not like last year, stuff's happening. That's when you need that one pitcher to come in and just throw the four hitter. And I don't know if they have that guy. And I have a lot of doubts about Feliz as a starter. And this seems to be the new trend, and I know you've written about it a little bit, but I don't know if this is a great trend of just converting these relievers to starters and thinking that it's going to work out. I mean, this is something that until very recently wasn't a very common thing, and now all of a sudden we're seeing it left and right, and do we have like enough of a sample size of examples to see how this might work out?
Yeah, this is the problem. This might have been the most wishy-washy column I've ever written for Grantland because there's no good answer because the sample size is limited, and I think it really depends on the pitcher himself. The one thing that you could point to is that all these guys were starting pitchers at one point. Virtually nobody's a relief pitcher their whole career. Maybe it was in college, maybe it was in the minor league, maybe it was in high school, but at some point they were dominant starters. In the case of Feliz and Aaron Curl, it looks like he's going to go back to the bullpen, and Dan Bart, I'm sure you have opinions about Bart too, and Chris Sale, the other guy, these guys were starters at some point, and in some cases pretty recently. I mean, Feliz was a top starting pitching prospect coming up through the minors, and then they just kind of looked at him in the rookie season and said, all right, you know, we need a closer. We can go with this guy. Let's go with it. And he threw 100 miles an hour, and it was great. So the talent is there. I love Mike Maddux. I think Mike Maddux doesn't get enough credit. He might be the best pitcher coach in all of baseball.
You're right.
And he can do a lot of good things with him, and he has with some Holland, Harris, and all these guys have improved. But I think that it's possible with Feliz because it's not that far in the past. To me, Bard is the most interesting guy. I don't know if he's going to go to the pen. I guess everybody's so undecided on that. But as of now, if you look at it, if he's going to be a starter or not, the last time he was a starter was 2000, and I think it was 7. And he had a walk rate of something like 9 per 9 innings. I mean, it was pretty ugly.
And apparently they overhauled his mechanics and he's a totally different pitcher, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, that it was 5 years ago that he started. So I think it just becomes a case-by-case situation. I would be more optimistic about someone like Feliz, assuming he's healthy, than someone like Abard, who maybe is a little bit further in his path. And Chris Sale also would be a little bit further in his path. So you pick your spots. I don't think it's categorically a good idea. I think sometimes it can be a good idea.
I think it's a bad idea with Bard. I just do. And that's somebody, like, when he started in the minors, he was terrible. He couldn't he was just walking people left and right. I just don't see it. And I think his career kind of fell into place when he started coming out of the bullpen. There's also a possibility that, you know, you look at how burned out he got by the end of last year that, you know, sometimes pitchers just lose it. You look at Manny Del Carmen, that guy was really, really underrated in 07 and 08 for the Red Sox, and now he's in the Yankees minor league farm system. You just never know with some of these guys. We didn't talk about the National League really, but I did want to mention you like the Cardinals a lot as a kind of an under the radar stealth sleeper. Explain.
Well, Vegas is saying 84.5 or 85.5, depending on what you're looking at. I mean, we can start with the fact that they won the World Series, blah blah blah. I think this is an overreaction to Pujols, to be honest with you. I think that if you just looked at Pujols' contributions last year, I mean, he was a 5-win player. A 5-win player is a very good player. It's not an MVP candidate. He missed 15 games. He didn't quite have the Pujols season where he was just an absolute terror all season long. That doesn't mean that he's a 5-win player forevermore. I think that he could have a nice bounce back season. It wouldn't surprise me at all. But I think if you're just talking about what the Cardinals lost and you only deal with Pujols, it's not going to be absolutely catastrophic. I'm not necessarily buying the line of protection thing or the multiplier effect or whatever. I think those guys are pretty good by themselves. I think Matt Holliday is a good hitter by himself. Carlos Beltran, and health is always an issue with Carlos Beltran, but if he's healthy, he's a good hitter in his own right. He doesn't necessarily need Pujols. And I look at some of the other guys on this Cardinals team, and one of the biggest reasons, aside from the pitching depth that I like them, is that Tony La Russa didn't give opportunities to a lot of these guys early in the season. One of those guys is Alan Craig, of course, and we saw what he did late in the season in the playoffs. I don't know what position he's going to play, maybe second base, but he's a really good hitter. He's going to hit. That's not going to be a problem. And another big, big one is the bullpen. And I think that people forget this a little bit because the Cardinals won the World Series and it seems like ancient history. The Cardinals' eighth inning guy on opening day last year was Miguel Batista. The Cardinals' closer on opening day last year was Ryan Franklin. Well, those guys are gone. I mean, they're no longer in baseball. Jason Mott is a dominant closer. You look at a guy like Casales, Eduardo Sanchez, Mark Szczęsny, who they picked up in that Rasmus trade that every stat head in the world, and I kind of include myself necessarily, like long-term, but worked out short-term. Very, very deep, young, dynamic bullpen. A guy like a Lance Lynn, who might go into the rotation if he do a job as a fifth starter, as long as Carpenter is out. Even with Wainwright coming back from TJ, even with Carpenter, a question mark with his injury, even with Pujols gone, I think that the stealth thing with this Cardinals team is all that young talent. And let's go ahead and mention Shelby Miller, who might be the best right-handed pitching prospect in all baseball this year. He's going to see action at some point. He's going to help that rotation, too. Do they win 95 games? No. Do they win 86 games? Yeah, I think that's pretty doable. And in the Central, that becomes a possible contender because all of a sudden the Reds don't have Ryan Madsen and the Brewers don't have Prince Fielder. That's not going to be the division that needs 94 or 95 wins to get it. It might be 86, 88, maybe up to 90. I think the Cardinals are capable of that. So, yeah, they're being undervalued, and I think it's just an overreaction to some of the big names going down or disappearing.
And you know who I'd watch out for in that division is the Astros. Last thing, and then we'll let you go. You like the under for the Dodgers, and I agree, it makes sense on paper, but I don't like the under for the Dodgers for this reason, as I emailed you. I think they're going to sell the team within the next 6 weeks or so, and I think the new owners are going to do the thing where they buy the team and then just totally start throwing money around and trying to acquire guys in the deadline and trying to be competitive right away so they can head into 2013 with some momentum. Are you sure about that one?
Well, since I'm name-checking your podcast over and over, let's go to the Steve Kerr podcast, and you talked about this where it happens in basketball that owners come in and they want to splash money around. It happens sometimes. But sometimes it doesn't, too. I mean, if you look at Ricketts with the Cubs, he comes in and he hires Theo and he says, okay, we're going to stay the course, check back with us in 2016. That's the flat-out stated plan. And I think that if you look at the Dodgers, it's possible that they could get some lunatic who comes in and just wants to do whatever. But I'm not sure that's going to happen. And obviously, it's much more difficult to do that during the regular season than it is in the offseason. It's all great to think that we're going to spend money. Well, what, are the Angels going to trade them Albert Pujols? Or the Reds going to say, yeah, here you go, here's Joey Votto, give us six prospects? It's during the season. So the Dodgers would almost have to go pick on the Pirates and say, yeah, give us Andrew McCutchen, which, by the way, isn't going to happen. And or whatever, something like that is going to have to happen. Those blockbuster trades don't tend to occur in May or June, and you would really, really, really need to be insane if you're the Dodgers and you're, I don't know, seven games out of a playoff spot by June or July, which is my bet that they're going to be, and say, yeah, it doesn't matter, we're going to go ahead and get player X. So I think that that does make sense in theory, but I don't know if that's what's going to happen in practice. The more likely scenario to me is that simply they just win 82 or 83 games to squeak by the over, because they have two of the best players in baseball in Kemp and Kershaw, and they can cover a lot of ground in terms of making up the wins that some other positions don't cover. But, man, Juan Uribe's are starting third baseman and Juan Rivera's are starting left fielder. Those are two replacement-level players in the lineup. I mean, that's a big, big disadvantage, even in the weak division. I just have question marks about this team, and they won just over 500 last year. They won 82, I believe it was, and they had 84 expected win-loss record. So I think they're going to be around that level. I don't think it's, you know, that they're going to win 68 games and they're just going to go way under. I'm envisioning more like a 77 or a 78 scenario where they fall a little bit short. And I would think, slash hope, if I'm a Dodgers fan, that when the new owner does come in, they go the opposite direction. Obviously, you don't trade Kemp or Kershaw, but maybe you see what you can get for Chad Billingsley, because if he's not going to pan out, maybe you do want a couple prospects for that guy. Maybe you see what you can get for Ted Lilly and so forth, and you try to build up and say, okay, we're going to try to be good in a couple of years, especially with Kemp under contract now. That extends your window a little bit where your best players stay longer. So you might be right. There could be a lunatic out there. There's some very interesting candidates that could have on the Dodgers. I'm excited to see what happens. But I'm just not sure that's going to happen. If it was the offseason, I would say maybe. During the season, I think that's more difficult to pull off.
I hope it stays the way it is, because we're at the point with the Dodgers right now locally where, you know, the Grantland staff could just say on a whim at 11 o'clock on a Wednesday, hey, there's a day game, let's go, and we'll sit 10 rows from third base. And right, those tickets are available. I mean, it was what happened to that team last year was really kind of shocking. I've never seen, you know, obviously in Boston, you don't see we never had a situation where the fan base just disappeared almost overnight. But the combination of the owner and then the incident with the Giants fan, and it's just like people bailed on going to Dodger games. And, you know, now you look at the Angels with Pujols, and they're putting billboards all over town, and they have a lot of momentum. The Lakers and the Clippers, the Kings are in a playoff fight. Like, the Dodgers are buried. Like I've been here, this is my 10th year in L.A. I can't remember the Dodgers being just completely buried like this. Nobody cares.
The only thing about going to the Dodgers game is if you go park to the game, even if it's an afternoon game, Grantland won't be publishing content the next day because it'll take you 14 hours to get out of the parking lot.
That's true. We'll have to have some wireless computers. All right, Jonah Carey, a pleasure. We'll see if these over-unders work out. I am excited. You have a very good track record. I may or may not have backed you on a couple of these wagers with our friend Cousin Sal. We will check out your writing about baseball every day on Grantland, and then on opening day we're figuring out something. You're going to be we're working you like a racehorse on opening day. Hopefully not the race.
Yeah, I'm doing my best. We're going to try to do something, and there will be a big, massive preview with all the predictions of every division, every playoff team, and every award that'll go up. I guess the real opening day is at 3 a.m. tomorrow, but it'll be on April 4th, which is when the Marlins and the Cardinals play.
All right, keep up the good work. Thanks.
Thanks, Bill.
Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.